Ladies and gentlemen, pay attention. This is your boy, the coach from the WWE. I would like to welcome you to the very first wrestling podcast in the world to take you on a weekly deep dive into classic matches along with legends of the squared circle. Enjoy the discussion. Enjoy the back and forth. There's so much to get into. Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Payoff.
Jeff, it's episode 100, and the boyhood dream has come true.
Yep.
No, not Shawn Michaels winning the title, but us getting Marty Jannetty on The Payoff. And what bigger episode could we have brought him on than episode number 100? We're here, finally.
Time to party. Time to party, my friend.
Dude, like we've done 100 of these.
And finally, and I thought it would take forever. You know, I was a non-believer, but who did we get? Who we have said it multiple times, probably every other episode, the one and only Marty Jannetty finally joining us on this week's episode.
And we'll get into the interview, but he was an awesome guest. We covered so much stuff. We talked barbershop. We talked him coming back. We talked about his best match with Shawn Michaels, according to the dirt sheets. We talked about some of the other moments in his career. I mean, what a wild story. And it was
just their outfits.
Oh,
a great story there. Yeah.
Oh, I know. And it was great to talk to him. And it made me very happy to hear that he's healthy. He's happy. It's great.
Getting healthy. So,
exactly.
On the road to get real healthy. Yep.
So Marty is just an awesome guy, awesome guest. But the reason we're here, Jeff, episode number 100, we're talking about the Rockers. We're talking about this, what I believe is one of the most underrated tag teams of all time. Okay. As much as people love them, just some of the stuff they were doing, it was so innovative. The colors, the moves. I mean, they were just awesome. They were unlike anything else you saw in programming. I loved Hogan. I loved Warrior, but my other favorites were the Rockers. And, you know, I just thought these guys were just so cool, so dynamic. And man, it was just great to watch them as a tag team. They had still to this day. I mean, we're all these years later, Jeff, this took place in 1992, the Rockers breakup. And here we are in 2021. And it's still the best tag team breakup of all time. They had some great matches. There's just so much to talk about here, man. So again, welcome to the 100th episode, everyone listening to us. We appreciate your support. If nobody was listening, we wouldn't have 100 episodes. So thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for giving us those 5 stars. Thank you for commenting on social media. Thank you for sharing our stuff. Thank you for your suggestions. We greatly, greatly, greatly appreciate it. And we are, as you can probably tell, so excited to be here, so excited to hit the 100 mark, and we're so excited for the next 100 because we've already made the list. We already know what the next 100 episodes are. So there's just too much to cover to stop now. Jeff, we're really talking Rockers. We're talking Rockers breakup. We're talking a Marty and Shawn match that they had together on Raw that's just a classic, especially for the time that it took place. Why are you excited for this topic and this guest?
I'm excited to be on The Payoff today. You know, this was just you and I shooting the shit over drinks, you know, some of the interactions you've had with Marty, and you know, that's, you know, we got him on the show. You got me on the show. Like, we're doing this. It's just one of those where, this one's been a long time coming. Hopefully, you know, in the past we've got we're more than happy when some of the news sites pick us up when we do these types of things and get a big interview. And Marty's definitely one that we expect to get picked up, and so it's always exciting. But yeah, before we get into it, this episode will be a little different, as you know, our everyday listeners have kind of been going along with us because you all know it's how we do it. It's every Monday. It's that one match. You know, it's the three part. The build, the payoff, and the aftermath. You know, this one's a little special because, of course, we have Tom's, you know, one of his Mount Rushmore of guests is here joining us today. You know, and it took us 100 episodes to get, but that's okay. Who knows what 150 or 200 will bring us. Maybe we'll get the other partner. Maybe Sean will be willing to stop by the Payoff Lounge for a little bit and spend some time. But, you know, we always forget to, of course, as everyone loves, there's that fourth part to the show as well too. And we have to talk about Manscaped. We can't overlook that. Of course, we'll get it out of the way early for all of you. Of course, Tom and I talk about it. You know, last week we were a little late reminding you guys, but this time it's the Performance Package 4.0. Summer just grinding along here. Like, we got to remember, we want to look our best, all that stuff. The new package, it's fantastic. It's one of those where we encourage everybody to check it out. But it is, of course, free shipping, 20% off, 20%. Use the code Payoff. It's absolutely worth it. We know a lot of people out there listening are probably like, God, these guys are just, you know, they're just hawking this shit. Like, we don't care. Like, you're just skipping over the ad right now. Like, don't do it. Check it out. We promise you it's absolutely worth it. We wouldn't be, you know, partnered up if we didn't like it. That's why we only have this one ad, is because we endorse the product. And so we're all about that. So, but with that, so, you know, the time, you know, like you said, you know, why we pick a certain match, you know, for me, this is one where it's just absolutely, like, it's just exciting. I'm glad we got a guest again. We always hear it and see it in some of the comments. Like, hey, we enjoy some guests. It's always, some people don't, some people do. That's okay. But that's why we keep mixing it up and doing this different stuff. And so, yeah. And, you know, Tom, a lot of times, you know, you are usually the one that asks me, like, why we picked a certain match and all this other stuff. But, you know, I have to ask you before we kind of get into it, like, just your fan fandom of Marty Jannetty, and really, are you willing to share a little bit of just, like, how did we get him? I don't even know the full story. So how did we get him to join us this week?
Well, he can be a tough guy to get a hold of, and I was able to get a hold of him. And yeah, I think that he's been in the limelight a little bit more these days. We, you know, caught him on the heels of appearing on the Shawn Michaels A&E documentary, and so I saw him on there, and I reached out and really wanted to get him on this show. I'll tell you, when I, you know, and I'm obviously a huge Shawn Michaels mark, but, you know, my biggest takeaway of that entire documentary was, hey, Marty's there. He looks good. He looks healthy. He looks happy, you know, really positive. It was so great seeing him. And so I reached out and, you know, I told him about the Payoff and what we were doing. And, you know, he said he'd be happy to come on and join us. And so, really great guy, really happy to have him there. And, you know, for those of you that go to some of these wrestle cons and stuff, make sure to go up, introduce yourself, grab a picture with him, talk to him. He is, of all the guys that you'll meet in this business, he is one of just the nicest and coolest guys to talk to and get to know. So glad to have him on the show. And then in terms of, you know, why this is the 100th episode, you know, I really wanted to talk to Marty. I really wanted him on the show. And I think this is a really big story. And the story is, you know, one of the most recognized, greatest tag teams of all time, the Rockers. Then we have the most iconic breakup of a tag team of all time. Shawn and Marty then proceed to have, as we'll talk about later, they were the match of the year in 1993. These guys were tearing down the house. Now, the reason we don't remember it better is because they didn't take place at a WrestleMania. And one of the greatest crimes of professional wrestling is we didn't get Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 8, and we didn't get Marty Jannetty and Shawn Michaels for the Intercontinental title at WrestleMania 8. Can you imagine those two matches, your world title and your Intercontinental title on that card? They would have been incredible. And I think that if we would have gotten that Shawn Marty match at WrestleMania 8 inside the Hoosier Dome, it would have been Steamboat Savage level. It would have been that good. It would have been so much better than anything else that was being done. That's how good these matches were. We're going to cover one today. So super excited to cover it. So excited to have Marty here. Jeff, are you ready?
Yeah, let's get into it, man.
All right. It's time for the build.
Oh, it's time for the build.
So untraditional build. We're talking about three different things. We're talking about the barbershop incident, right, where the tag team breaks up on January 12th, 1992. Okay, so beginning of 1992, they break up. Obviously, as Jeff's going to talk about, there's some really good build to that situation. Then Marty Jannetty comes back to the World Wrestling Federation on October 31st, 1992. Okay. And then the last thing that we're going to talk about is this just classic match these two had on July 19th of 1993. So this whole storyline arc, I mean, from before the barbershop to everything after and the matches they had, I mean, it was on and off for a long period of time. You know, as Sean is really finding his footing as the Heartbreak Kid and becoming Intercontinental Champion and having great matches. This particular Raw, July 19th, 1993, we're inside the Manhattan Center. We had two dark matches. Rich Myers, no idea who he is, defeating Dwayne Gill, who obviously later became Gilbert. And then we had Razor Ramon defeating Mr. Hughes. So two different dark matches. And then we move on and we get the actual card. 23-minute match, the match that Marty and I are talking about during the interview. Shawn Michaels, your Intercontinental Champion, against Marty Jannetty. And again, 23-minute match. You didn't get a lot of that on WWE, WWF television at the time. So really a different type of match than was happening on their programming at the time.
And to be clear, when we say Raw, this was not Monday Night Raw. Like, this was 1993 at the Manhattan Center. Like, this was the main event and opened the show. And so, to be clear, when we're talking about this, remember, this was not how we envision 3 hours nowadays. So when we get into these, the rest of these matches were super short because
that was the only TV time. You know, you do a couple commercials and a couple vignettes and that's your show. So the only other things that took place on this episode were Men on the Mission, Mo and Mabel with Oscar defeating Rich Myers again and Hank Harris in a minute 51. Bastion Booger winning a squash match, not losing a squash match, winning a squash match and defeating Scott Dupree in a minute 28. And then the 1-2-3 Kid winning a squash match against Chris Duffy in 2 minutes and 17 seconds. So this episode of Raw, July 19th, 1993, it's about one thing and one thing only. And that's Shawn Michaels, Marty Jannetty, Intercontinental title. So Jeff, tell us about the Rockers. How did they come together? Tell us about some of their highlights. How do we get to the breakup? There's so much to cover here. What a great team and what a great story.
Yeah, and so we talked about this a little bit before on some previous episodes and just kind of getting into it. But, you know, and Marty talks about it a little bit here, but really it started, it was, you know, the NWA Central State Wrestling. It was based out of Kansas City in 1985 where these guys kind of, you know, first started. And so you had 1986 where the two of them were signed to American Wrestling Association, the AWA. They had a lot, AWA at the time had a lot of talent that was going over to WWF. And so they needed some new people. And so that's why Marty and Sean kind of, you know, got a big reason why they got signed here. So like they said, they kind of had the pretty boy gimmick, you know, and with the outfits that they had, they were matching like, you know, and, you know, Marty really talks a lot about their kind of outfits and kind of what came of some of that. That's a big part of the interview. You'll hear that when he's talking about some of that stuff. It's kind of cool. You know, at the time too, when he says it, they were the Midnight Rockers as well too, kind of different name, kind of, you know, what they were going with based on the song. And kind of having that, but then it's really even there, like kind of going after the tag team titles in the AWA. So, it was actually 1987, January, they beat Buddy Rose and Doug Summers for the tag titles. It was interesting because they actually got a WWF like offer while they were still the tag titles in AWA. And so interesting kind of overlap here. And this is the Midnight Rockers, even though they were signed with WWF at the time, they were actually still holding the title. So there was actually a quick change. It was summer, May, 1987, just a few months later where they dropped the titles actually pretty quick. So they go over there. So, but their first appearance was actually a week, less than a week later, 1987 in May, after dropping the titles, actually a house show in Minnesota, who they, there was one of their first initial matches challenging the then WWF World Tag Team Championships, the Hart Foundation, for a title match. And so, talk about getting thrown into the fire on this one. Like, hey, you know, you're going through the promotions, you know, you're in the, I say the quote indies and kind of doing that. And then your first match, you're taking on the tag champs of the Hart Foundation. So, you know, interesting, but then really, I mean, strap a rocket to them here. 4 days later, they're on TV, then Wrestling Challenge, you know, having their first one and actually beating Jose Estrada Sr. and Jimmy Jack Funk. And so kind of winning that one. And so that was really, it's interesting because as much as it looked like the rocket was getting strapped to them, they were let go actually pretty quick on this one. And so they had a couple other house show matches and things like that, but and the rumor, and I think Marty kind of maybe talks about it a little bit here in the interview, is really kind of let go. They were just partying pretty hard. And so it was the time as well too. I think that just the partying, not focusing on the ring work, like, you know, maybe different, you know, kind of style in WWF versus coming up from AWA.
I mean, with all due respect, they're lucky to be alive.
A lot of these guys.
I just can't imagine it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have a couple beers and I'm hungover for 2 days now.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. And so dealing with that, but you know, and so these guys, yeah, imagine, you know, and Marty talks about it, you know, getting back into the ring and stuff like that and training. Like, you know, I remember, I still think when Brian Pillman Jr. was talking about it too, of how like, you can't just get in and get a 20-minute match. Like you got to work up to it. Like you got to build your stamina. You got to do these things. But these guys, yeah, some of the stories we were hearing, and I, you know, we were in the mid-season break for Dark Side of the Ring, but the plane ride, some of these crazy shit, like these guys, like you said, they were partying hard and then they were going out and putting on 5-star matches. So, you know, it's just impressive. So, but then coming back, returning, it was June 1988, again, Superstars of Wrestling. It was a squash match, but then had their debut, part of a Survivor Series 10-team tag match. They were actually eliminated. There was a double DQ, them and the Bolsheviks. And so, but you know, on TV doing their things. And so now there's always the discrepancy here. It's kind of weird, you know, but, you know, by WWE's records, the Rockers never actually had the titles as the tag team champs. They actually did win the tag team champs, though. It was a 2 out of 3 falls. It was in Indiana, Fort Wayne. It just politics and controversy. Brett didn't want to, it seems like, you know, from everything I read, it was just messy, but they never technically had it. So, but after really being together since, you know, 1985 and, you know, in the territories and doing that, we finally get to the split in December, 1991. So, you know, Marty, you know, he talks about it, you know, that, you know, there's always to loss to the, you know, the wrestling gods of exactly what happened, you know, the behind the scenes was, you know, they wanted Sean to, they were going to strap the rocket to him and be the singles guy. Like, you know, we'll probably one of those, we'll never know the full true story, even talking to Marty and Sean, but, you know, and you know, whether it's contractual, whatever it might have been, we'll never know. But of course, the famous Brutus the Beefcake Barber's barbershop, you know, taped, you know, it was really taped like a month earlier and then, you know, kind of aired. Where, of course, you know, the Beefcake actually interviewing the Rockers about their problems. They had some tag matches where, you know, super kicks and just kind of mess ups and things like that. So they had been building to it a little bit. But of course, seeming that they had worked through their problems, but then Michaels super kicking Jannetty through the glass window of the barbershop set, just one of the absolute, like, most, you know, we've been using a lot lately, but just memorable, iconic images ever in wrestling of him just, you know, draped over the barbershop after the super kick. You know, Michaels, you know, ripping it was a picture of the two of them kind of showing, you know, it's just that it was done, turning Michael's heel, kind of having that happen. Interesting story too. You got to listen to it, pay attention, like the glass that they had that he actually went through. Surprised Marty wasn't more injured. He talks about that story a little bit here. You know, and kind of dealing with it, you know, it was one of those, it was actually a blade job after the barbershop. And so he, you know, not something that was happening a lot. And so, wasn't able to get storyline into certain things. So just, you know, the build up to the breakup and just kind of what was happening, like, just it's really one of those stories where, you know, it almost doesn't make sense in retrospect of why they did it because of how hot these guys were. But, you know, it's just how it played out and what they wanted to do. And so, super interesting, you know, there's no other way to cut it. I'll kind of stop there with the breakup because we want everyone to kind of listen to the interview. And then we've got a little bit more to talk about on this one, but yeah, Tom, thoughts on all that? Anything else you want to kind of throw in there? I'm sure you do.
No, we'll talk about it after the interview, but it's just really good stuff. You know, it's There's two ways that I look at this. One is there's just a lot to love, right? There's some just great matches that they had as a tag team, great breakup. And then the other part of me is like, man, you know, I just wish we would have gotten one, you know, 25 minute, 20 minute classic on a massive stage, SummerSlam at Wembley or WrestleMania 8 or even WrestleMania 9. I don't know. I really wish we would have had that opportunity, but again, great stuff. You know, in any other era, they would have been tag champs. It's just the belts just didn't move as much then. At this point, you know, in a different era, they would have been a tag team champion for sure. And I'd even argue that, you know, may have been a tag team for longer, you know, yeah. Just the way things work now. So anyways, yeah. Great stuff. Great recap as always. At Payoff Pod on all social media platforms, find us, follow us, like us, share, retweet, all that stuff. We really appreciate the support and we love it. So hope you enjoy this interview. And again, if you want to try to watch along or at least watch this stuff with us, Barbershop Breakup, the return on 10/31/92, and then the match from July 19th, 1993. So either before or after the interview, watch those just so you know what we're talking about. But great stuff. And let's get right into our interview with Marty Jannetty. It's time for the payoff.
Oh, it's time for the payoff.
All right, we're here with the one and the only Marty Jannetty. Marty, welcome to the payoff.
Thank you, sir. It's a pleasure to finally be here.
Dude, yeah, we've been trying to do this for a while. I'm so happy we're able to make it work. I am, you know, a lifelong fan. I grew up just absolutely loving your work and the stuff you did. And it is a pleasure to be talking to you. It was so great to see you on TV a few weeks ago. The A&E documentaries that were done. First thing I want to ask you is, how are you doing these days?
Man, I'm doing pretty good. Speaking of that documentary, man, I was so close to not doing it. Because, you know, they'd called and told me about it, and it was going to be filmed, or it actually was, like 6 weeks after I had my first ankle surgery, I had reconstructive surgery. So all I could do was, like, lay around and keep my leg up in the air, eat and go to sleep and get fat. and then I had a tooth knocked out my last wrestling practice. And I had the dentist, you know, was right in the midst of the lockdowns for the pandemic. So I couldn't get in and get a tooth put in. So I had no tooth, couldn't get a haircut. I was cutting my own, and I looked like the Scarecrow from Wizard of Oz. Damn. And I was like, man, I don't know if I want to go. I ain't been on national TV in a while. So I don't know if this is the way to come back. I'm missing a tooth. Fat, not horribly fat, but just the belly's bulging out. Because, I mean, I did nothing but lay around. But I went ahead and figured, you know, that would give me motivation to work out hard when I can. And, you know, I couldn't make that up to the fans if I didn't do that. So I went ahead and did it. And I mean, I liked it. It turned out well. I just wish I wouldn't have looked so bad.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the thing is, if you wouldn't have done it, I think people obviously would have said, well, where are you and what's going on with him? And, you know, something's wrong. So I think just the fact that people saw you and, you know, you looked happy and, you know, you obviously really contributed to the story. So I think people were just really happy to see you. I don't know what you've seen online or what the feedback you've received is, but I know the stuff I've seen was just, hey, it was so great to see him. So great that he was a part of this and looks like he's doing well and he's happy and healthy.
Yeah, I didn't really get any bad feedback. You know, I mean, at least not on my sites. Right? I mean, I saw on the other site, and I don't even think they were talking about me. They were making fun of Sean, talking about, you know, somebody has that much money, you know, it's not a shame to get hair plugs. And then somebody else had commented, yeah, these guys got all this money, you know, they should get teeth and hair and something. I forgot what else they said. And I thought, well, that tooth, when I wondered that one was directed at me. Overall, I thought it was great. I was really concerned because it had been a couple of times. John and I do great, man. We see each other at signings and, you know, we hug and, you know, talk a little chit chat and then we go do our signing. And but every time I would see him do an interview, he just has a bad habit of telling things slanted a little bit towards him, and sometimes it makes me look bad. And I know he's not doing it just to be shitty. Excuse my language, sorry. To be ugly. But I mean, he said, say, I understand when he can't make us, you know, he's still out there doing it. I'm pretty much a byproduct now. But I still don't like it. I mean, you know, but he actually came pretty damn truthful on this one. And I'll try to watch the cuss word. Sorry about that.
No, no, you're fine. You feel free. We cuss on here as well. No problem at all.
I feel like I'm in the dressing room just talking. Yeah.
So the relationship is good. You guys see each other from time to time, and you guys are on good terms.
Oh yeah, real good. I mean, we were texting back and forth. That was about it, you know, because neither one of us had time to sit down and talk. You know, he's got his family, and he's got 3 shows. I don't know if he still got to hunting, but at the time he had a hunting show, the hunting and fishing show. I mean, with wrestling with it next, and then our NXT, and then I heard somebody was getting a religion show. So I mean, gosh, he's staying busy, you know, and myself, you know, not as busy as him, but staying busy. So we really were just texting, you know. Even that's kind of drifted apart, but I think we got some kind of good stuff coming up in the future.
Yeah, so you haven't been to a signing in what, like probably a year and a half. Are you excited to get back on the road a little bit and get to some of these conventions and fan fests?
Oh, definitely. We did what we did during the lockdowns was called virtual signings, and you know, you'd fly up to where, like, they went to New York, went to Boston, I think Chicago, once in Florida. And you sign online, you know, and they watch you signing their name, and you talk to, you know, to the customers, and that it's kind of fun. I enjoyed it, you know. But I always enjoy interaction with the fans, you know. Sometimes interaction with the fans can get brutal, but I enjoy that too. Also, if I got over on them more than they got over on me.
Yeah, well, hey, I had a chance to meet you a number of years ago. We had you were drinking Jack and Cokes, and so I said, hell, I'd love to drink one with you. So we had one and bullshitted for a few minutes, and you couldn't have been more friendly. So for those listening to this, when you see Marty at one of these things, go up, talk to him, get a picture, get something signed. He is he's a really great guy, and he's one of those guys that'll sit there and talk to you. He's not gonna, you know, just sign something and be in a pissed off mood.
Yeah. What was that where we were at?
That was the WrestleMania in Dallas. So that would have been that was probably 6 or 7 years ago.
I remember we was downstairs in the hotel at that, what was it? The lobby bar or a restaurant?
Yeah. It was just the lobby bar, and you were drinking Jack. I said, what do you want? Jack and Coke. I said, done. I ordered 2 of them. We sat there.
I actually remember that.
Yeah. I hope we can do it again sometime soon. It'd be great to see it one of these things. So yeah. Let's go down memory lane a little bit. You know, you and
I just got to tell you, I quit drinking Jack and Coke though.
Why?
I had to cut back on Coke.
So we're gonna go down memory lane. I got the barbershop pulled up. I'm gonna hit play. I just want to hit you with some questions here. And this was, you know, as you know, and you've been told a million times, this is just one of the most iconic, really, moments of this era. You know, the best tag team breakup of all time. One of the great, angles that's ever taken place. Let me ask you this. At the time that you filmed this, did you know how great it was? Were you sitting there going, shit, this is some good stuff? Or over time, have you been surprised how much people love this?
I probably surprised because, you know, I tend to be a perfectionist. I mean, and I was sitting there thinking, did it go right? You know, until you see it, when you're doing it, you got to see it too. Because when you're in the moment, you know, when you're in the event, you got a different perspective than when you're watching, you know. And when I went back and watched it, I thought, oh, well, good. That was it. It came off good. But I didn't know it would get all the attention. Like 30 years later, it's still talked about. Or 29 years later, it's still talked about. I mean, yeah. A lot.
Yeah, time flies. So this is January 12th of 1992. This aired. How early did you know that you guys were going to be breaking up? So how long prior to this were you told that they were going in a different direction?
Probably because we did the build up to it. You know, having friction in the ring, like against the Road Warriors and against a couple other teams. Yeah, and I think one time Sean actually like went to grab me or what did he do? I can't remember. I think he might even slap me upside the face. It was against the Road Warriors maybe. And I grabbed him and drew back to hit him and held back. And, you know, we just kept building that up. We knew it was coming eventually, just didn't know when, you know, but Vince had set us down. And Sean and I, and it was after we had a little issue, we had a problem, and I mean, you know, him and I together, we got in a fight in Denver, and Vince had us come in the TV, sit down and talk. Sean had actually quit after the fight thing. He quit. He called. I mean, I tried to get him to forget what happened the night before. We had to go to Seattle the next day. And he was like, no, I already quit. And I was like, come on, man. That was yesterday. Come on, let's go. But, I, you know, whether it was embarrassment or I don't know, or he didn't want to be around me or whatever, because his eyes were swollen and, you know, he kind of, man, he ended up looking real bad. You know, so I could see the embarrassment there. He didn't want to, you know, he didn't want to go in front of anybody, the boys or whatever. And, but so Vince talked him into coming into TV anyway. I think it was just in Phoenix, Arizona. So we went in and had this big talk about the whole deal. You know, like, I'm getting that crossed up because that was after a TV thing. We had talked prior, one time prior. Let me back that up and tell you where Vince, no, let me stick right here on that. You know, we went in and you know, Vince had said, now we hadn't talked about it prior because Vince had told me he saw, well, I want to get Sean over big. I see superstar in him, and I just quite don't see that in you yet, Marty. So we're going to need you to really help. I was like, oh, great. But, I mean, you know, I didn't mind. But I was, you know, at the same time, I'd asked Vince on that first meeting about it. I said, well, where will I go afterwards? Because I know generally when they break a tag team up, the one that helps get the other, catapult the other one to the top, won't see much of him later. And I wasn't going to sit there for 2 months, 3 months, whatever it took, and make him a superstar and then get my notice I'm gone. You know, so that was the main thing I was trying to make sure of.
So let me ask you this. Was there ever any conversation or did you ever have any thoughts around having your own gimmick? Because, you know, you kind of just continued wearing the same stuff and being the same character. Did you have...
I'll tell you a quick, I'll try to make it quick, story on that as far as the outfits. You know, Sean and I had to wrestle each other. What was it, Royal Rumble?
Yep.
And I had to, we was going to come back at WrestleMania as a semi-main feud match, you know, because of the way the Rumble ended. The girls that made our outfits, I actually introduced them to the wrestling world, and they made a couple outfits for us. And Sean didn't want to wear it. It was in Chicago. I'll never forget. We'd been on the road 30 days. We had like 4, 5, 6 outfits, and you wash them as you can on the road. We didn't have a clean one that night. And these girls came up with pretty much our style, you know, the tassels, the animal print. And you know, it was a gift they wanted to give us. And I said, yeah, that looks cool. And, you know, I took them in and got them out and Sean says, where'd you get these? I said, you know, some of the fans, a couple girls out there. I said, this is cool. We got clean stuff for tonight. He goes, man, we ain't wearing some shit that fan gave us. Are you crazy? And I'm like, man, look at it. It's our style. What difference does it make who made it? That was nice of them. We're not wearing stuff from fans. That's what I'm going to wear. You go ahead and put that stinky shit on. You go ahead. And so everybody fell in love with our stuff. Bruce Beefcake asked, like, where'd y'all get that made? They introduced them to the girls and then a couple other guys. And then next thing you know, WWF has hired them. They were to this day on the staff, you know, making the outfits. Seamstress, we call them. Davey Boy, there was three sisters. And a lot of the boys used to get, you know, Davey Boy nicknamed, renamed them the Nuns on the Run, Everybody was after them. And they were all kind of pretty. And but so anyway, you know, I started at one point with seeing one of them. I won't say any names. And Sean was seeing the other one of the three. I don't know who the redhead one was seeing. I shouldn't have said a color of hair either. But anyway, I mean, there, like I said, that was like 1991. And they're still working with them with WWE. And it all started like that. Well, at the Royal Rumble, they had made an outfit for me. And that was almost like it was like Christmas on pay-per-views because they would have us a new outfit. And they all were pretty cool, usually. You still there?
Yo, I'm here.
Okay. Yeah, and so I couldn't wait to get it. You know, Sean had his new style. Remember, he had the chaps or something, the mirror things. His was cool, different style. So I couldn't wait to see what they was going to have for me. But since Sean was the one that was being the guy that's, a heartbreak kid, I'm going on, they made his different. They left mine the same, you know, the tassels and all. But the only thing was that outfit, the Royal Rumble outfit, man, it was the most ugly. It was hideous. I pulled it out and I looked at it, and it looked like a damn air filter. Did you remember they had the white strings on the black thing and like a damn air filter? I put it on and it was like made me look 10, 20 pounds fatter. So now I was a Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. I was like, well, gosh, dang. And, what was I going to say? It was a gift. They never charge us because they got so much work by working, with the company now.
Yeah.
So Sean and I always got ours done, so you can't go say, hey, man, shit, because it's like a gift.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I know exactly what you're talking about. I still remember it.
Well, yeah. And of all the outfits I've ever had in my life, when I started, when I went to doing some international stuff on my own independently, I had one promoter, never been told this in my entire life, asked me what I was going to wear. And they never asked. I said, I don't know yet. Why? Anything you want me to wear? He goes, well, if you can just not wear what you wore at Royal Rumble. That was the only time I've ever been said anything about outfit. But I went through one of them. I won't say which, because she's the one still there. And that just told everybody there who it is. But her name's Julie. She's a sweetheart of a girl. But I really felt slighted on this. They were making Sean's super outfits, and that air filter, I went and asked, I said, hey, can you kind of sort of get away from the air filter man with the tassels and make something a little, maybe start angling away from the rockers, just, and I'm not going to be a rocker no more. And never forget, she goes, well, really, Marty, I mean, are they going to use you good or not? And I was like, oh, my God. Did you really just, I mean, even if there wasn't, what does that mean? You're not going to make me good shit? So I didn't know how to answer. I said, I don't know why. Do you? She goes, well, I'm thinking that they're not.
Jeez.
Okay. So that means, you get your information. I'm not calling them rats, but we used to have a saying, if you want to know where you're booked for the next couple of weeks, go ask the ring rats. They know before you do. But not calling them rats because they weren't. But I always like, was like, something I don't. If you didn't say anything, she might have got herself in trouble. But so the next outfit she made was okay. And then she handed me a sheet of paper, and I'm like, what's this? She goes, that's the bill. Well, okay. And I look, it was like, what, 500 and something. I'm thinking, how much was Sean's? She didn't say that. She walked away. So I asked Sean because his, I wondered his look way better. I figured his must be a couple thousand. And I asked Sean, he goes, they're not charging us. So it's like, ain't that some shit? I see how it is now. I got them hired on. And now you trust Sean. Well, you were seeing him for one thing. And then next thing, he's just going to be the superstar. So we'll keep making this shit free. Sorry, Marty, you're going to have to pay a bit. Ain't that some shit? It's so typical, though.
Hey, so when you got thrown through this barbershop window, I mean, was it really gimmicked or did it hurt a little bit?
It didn't hurt. If I tell you why, and I said this on Shawn Michaels' biography, He got me back for Denver with that super kick right before it. Yeah. I mean, when he picked me up off the floor and we were looking at him because I was, you know, seeing if he was going to say something or checking on me. And because he was saying something, but I think he was cussing me out or something, you know, in character. I mean, and, you know, next thing I knew, I was hanging out in the back of that window. And I had some cuts on my forehead, a little bit, not bad, and some on my stomach where I was laying across the sill, window sill. And, you know, sugar glass shouldn't have done that. But I, you know, I thought nothing of it because, again, the segment went well. I thought it went well. And so the production guy come up to me and goes, "Oh, man, you're okay? You're okay?" I'm like, "Yeah." He goes, "Oh, gosh, thank God." I said, "Bro, it's okay. What's the matter?" He goes, "Well," he goes, "I hate to tell you because I don't want to get fired." I said, what? And he's like, "Well, we had three windows." You know, they have extra stuff for everything. In case it doesn't go well, you have to go out and do it again, like take two, in front of the same damn live crowd. I'm so glad we didn't have to do that. But they had three window panes, two of them sugar glass, one regular. You know, and he said, "Well, somebody forgot to mark them." So they said everybody sat there scared to death, thought, "Well, we're going to get fired for not marking them. And we got two out of three chances to get it right. Let's just see if it goes." They took a chance and they got it wrong. Oh my God. And they were so scared because he was telling me that was the real one because of the way it broke. And they said they were like so apologetic and scared they were going to get fired now because I was going to say something. But I'm like, "No, bro, it's fine. Don't worry about it. I would suggest for somebody else in the future, because that could have gone real bad."
So I'm playing this clip. I'm playing now. I want to talk about this. Was the this is when you returned and look at him in the mirror and what a great little setup this was. What do you remember about this? Ironically, I don't know if you have any memories of this. This is the night that Bret Hart also became world champion and beat Ric Flair.
I remember, I can't remember where it was, but I remember coming out of the audience with the, I think I had my Guns N' Roses shirt. I was so proud to sport that.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. I was so random that you had that on.
Yeah, I had to show some kind of rocker left over, but not them, me. I mean, but yeah, and then the whole, you know, mirror thing, and I thought it went fairly well. I just had to be so careful with it, and you can see it when I'm holding the mirror. You'll notice I'm so gentle with it because I didn't want it to break before I hit him. And then I think Jerry later, she was like, "You can't hit no harder than that." I was like, "Okay, I didn't know I was supposed to. I can."
Yeah, she was a tough broad, huh?
One of the toughest ever. I mean, you know, the girls today athletically are unbelievable. But the toughness, I would put Sherry up there. Man, that's what the guys do. I mean, technically, you know, athletically, the guys today. But, I mean, if you come down to just raw bone mean, and the old schoolers, man, they got that one, you know. I seen the girl talking about Sherry. I saw her take a bump over the top rope. It was at what was it called? Wrestle Rock Rumble. It was at the Metrodome in Minneapolis. Our first, the biggest crowd, we had 30,000 or 40,000 people. This is way back before WrestleMania took off, and you know, with all the attendance records. And this was AWA days. She was wrestling. I think it was Candy Divine. And she jumped, did a crossbody or something, and Candy ducked, and she went over the top rope. Now, we're a good 40 feet back, and 40 more than that, probably 60 feet back, and she went over the top rope, and there was no mats on the floor back then. You know, it was just concrete floor, and you could hear her body smacking the cement floor when she landed, and we're all about, "Oh, shit. Should we go out and check her? Should we go?" We thought she's knocked out. She's just going to be splat. We got to go scrape her up. And I would be damned if, like, 30 seconds later, she ain't getting back up into the ring slowly. She was selling it and got back in the ring and did a great match, and she wasn't hurt a bit. That right, that I want, the guys wouldn't have got up from that bump. first of all, most of them wouldn't attempted that bump. Yeah. That's when I knew, man, that girl, wow.
Looks like you hit her pretty good, and she was busting your balls that you didn't hit her hard enough.
Yeah, in the back, she goes, she may have just been playing too, but she's as hard as you can hit. I think she was wanting it to go, like, the heart thing to go over and like loop and hang on around her neck. You know, I guess, I don't know. But she was smiling, so, you know, she probably just messing with me.
So I'm going to play a match. This is from Raw on July 19th, 1993. I don't know if you know this or not, but this actually, believe it or not, is the highest rated dirt sheet match of your career. Now, I know you've said that you've had some others that you know, are really proud of as well, but this match here, and I just hit play on it, July 19th, 93 from Raw. Don't know how well you remember this match, but
was it the title match?
Yeah, so he's coming in as champion for this one.
Oh, okay, the 2 out of 3 fall.
Yeah, so I want to get, you know, I just we'll talk a little bit about the match throughout, but you know, just in general, you know, you guys really tore the house down with some great matches, and you know, as you remember during this era, there wasn't a whole hell of a lot of good wrestling happening, so it really stuck out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, well, plus I mean, Sean and I, we just knew each other so well that you know, a lot of the guys, you the thing is, you're working the crowd. You know, I always tell the guys, you know, in my schools and seminars, you know, you're not just working the guy in the ring. You're working the crowd. Your job is to get them excited or upset or, you know, to have control of them. And, you know, when you're like Sean and I, when you become one, like we wouldn't even have to talk. Or sometimes you adjust to the crowd, like, all right, this ain't working. Let's speed it up, slow it down, go to a high flying, go to the ground, you know, because different parts of the countries, they're like different stuff, you know, like in Iowa and around there. Back in the day, now I don't know what it's like now. They used to like the groundwork because they're so good in their collegiate, you know, wrestling. And you go down to Texas or LA with all the luchas, and they like the high flying stuff. So you know, you have to adjust according to where you are in the country. And again, another thing I like to teach my students is study the crowd. When you're watching video, don't just watch a move you can do. You don't know why you're doing it, number one, but two, watch the crowd, study the crowd, see what. So you pick up quicker on what the crowd's reacting to. And, you know, we and Sean and I never even had to speak. We never had to make adjustments. We knew what to do with each other because we had like, I think it was 7 years. Let's see, 86 to 91, however many years that is. You know, 300 days a year on the road. I mean, we do each other, you know, 300 matches a year. Well, at AWA, we didn't have that many, but 88, I think. Once we got to WWF, it was 300 a year for 4 straight years, 5, whatever it was. And you learn each other. But we clicked as one, and that's basically what a team has to do to be as one unit. You become one with each other and the crowd. You connect, and you're all just one, functioning as one. And so, we you know, it was easy for Sean and I to have great matches. I generally... When I worked with, you know, started working with other people, I would have to judge against what I considered to be the best. And sometimes, I mean, like Benoit was pretty up there. Our matches, you know, we had a couple of matches, but Kurt Angle is probably the one that impressed me the most.
I mean, that match the two of you had was off the charts.
Which one?
The one you and Kurt Angle, that one that you know on TV.
You know what was crazy about it was. We just met that day. I mean, you know, Sean and I had 7 years together. You know, the kid and I did pretty good. 1, 2, 3 kid, X-Pac. Yeah. We got pretty decent together. It took a little bit of getting adjusting to each other. Bob Holly, Hardcore Holly. It took a minute with him. Almost didn't make it with him. But we finally got in sync. There was somebody. When Al Snow and I clicked, I mean, quick. It was great. Yeah, I got to tell you something real quick while we're right here talking about that. All my tag team partners, one time, you know, Smoking Guns, remember them?
Oh, yeah.
We always rode together, me and Bob Holly, and when we were teaming. And I think Was Al Snow? Al Snow, I know, was 96. Was that before? That was after Hardcore, right? After when the New Rockers came along, around the same time frame, maybe.
Yeah.
But whatever it was, old Billy Gunn, he was talking about the kid. You know, everybody that was like shot up to the top. You know, Sean, of course, then the kid, Hardcore Holly, and this was. This is after Hardcore and I split up, and he became Hardcore Holly. What's his name? Came X-Pac. And even Al Snow became Hardcore guy, you know, after he champion. You know, Billy Gunn says, man, I want to tag with you. Everybody you tag with shoots to the top. They should read me. Your name should be Springboard Jannetty. I didn't know how to take that. Other than, damn, I must be one hell of a good coach.
Well, yeah, I mean, you at every stage of your career, even, you know, when you came back not that long ago to work with Kurt, a few of those matches, I mean, you still look fantastic.
Yeah, and I'll get back to, you mean work-wise?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. You versus Kurt, I mean, it looked like that match took place in, 1995.
And most of that might go on him. I don't know. I was running a school in Florida, Tallahassee, Florida at the time. So, and I like to do hands-on training. So I'll be in there bouncing around with my students. And I stayed in pretty good shape for that. And that was really like, kind of felt like I cheated a little bit because, it was like, I'd give some of my students spots for their matches, upcoming matches, and then I'd practice with them. So then when Kurt and I were getting together, I thought, hey, Kurt, well, let's do this one. And he was like, yeah, I like that. Let's do that. We're going, yeah, I like that too. I mean, so there were spots I already knew. But yeah. But Kirk, shit. I mean, he was so easy, so good. And we had only met that day. I was so blown away at how good he was. You know, because I wrestled in college too and did pretty good. Competed in nationals both years as I stayed in college. Of course, world champion, Olympic gold medalist. It's just such a hard, it used to be such a hard transition from amateur style to pro. So I went, and I watched Kurt win the gold medal. I was watching on TV when he won. So happy, and impressed at how hard, because he had to go overtime to beat the, I forget who was wrestling, Iranian or something. But when he got into business, I thought, well, I hope he does good, because I was so proud that, American won the gold medal. I turned the TV on to see him here and there. I'm like, shit, he's getting good. Next thing I know, he's at the top. And when I got to work with him, I was like, it was fast. It didn't take him 5 years, 10 years. It was like water, man, which means it's light. We call the guys that are stiff and hard to work with crowbars, and the ones that are easy are water. And it was water, everywhere you needed him to be, he was already hitting there. Yeah. And if you needed to move him, if he needed to move you, it just was so smooth. And I loved that match. It was a mixture of a little old school and new school, which is why I like this so much.
What's the last match that you've worked?
With WWE or?
No, just in general. When's the last time you were in the ring working?
Probably about a year. Somewhere in the neighborhood a year and a half ago, my ankles had just started deteriorating. In fact, when I had to wrestle The Miz, and I think that was 2009 or 2010, my left ankle had blown out. It collapsed, but I didn't have health insurance and I couldn't afford what they charge for the surgery. So I just had to make it work for a while, try to build up the money. And I think it was like $40,000 for the entire, process of surgery, rehab, and everything else, which I didn't even do the rehab. Did the rehab at home when I finally did do this here, because the rehab they do is silly. I had myself ready way quicker than they would have had. But anyway, 2000, you can see the way I'm running down the ramp. I had to match with The Miz. And that's one of my... my happiest, proudest, because Snoop Dogg, who I'm a huge fan of, he introduced me out to the ring. That was, I loved that. And you could see, you could tell. I mean, if you didn't know, but now that I've said, if you ever see that match, you could tell the hobble. And I just couldn't move in the ring that much. Johnny Laurinaitis was you know, that's Animal's brother, Road Warrior, God rest his soul. You know, he come up and told me, even after the Miz match, he goes, we could use your help, you know, train some of these new guys. And I told him, so let me get myself in shape. Which basically he was offering me a contract, you know, a job, but I just didn't feel I was ready for it after that match. You know, and they appreciate it, even Vince. They were like, nobody does that. Nobody turns down a contract because they know they're not, their conditioning is not quite where they want it. And unfortunately, I never really got it back because the other ankle started going out on me. So now I'm walking around having to wrap them every morning if I wanted to walk around in less pain. And it's been, well, to what it. It started coming out, what, 2009? It's been 11 years that I've not had good ankles. And, you know, I got the second ankle surgery here recently, about 6 weeks ago, and it's coming along faster than the other one did. So I will have them both well enough to start training my ass off. Probably in another, I'm going to go about 6 more weeks. And, man, look out. Because I'm going to train, be able, will be the hardest. And I always train hard. Even Kurt Angle said to me after the match, he goes, damn, what kind of training routine you got? And I'm like, I don't know. I got different things. He goes, man, these young guys here can't even hang with me. How old are you now? And I said, nah, don't worry about that. But so yeah, he was surprised at it. He goes, I can't believe that you tired me out and these guys here can't. You know, I do train like an animal when I'm not doing wrong things. So which when I'm not doing wrong things no more, is I don't have to. I had to before to kill the pain, or at least that's the excuse I like giving.
So when this other ankle's when you're done with your PT and you're, you know, kind of back up and running, I mean, you're going to probably feel better than you felt in years, right?
Yes, sir. And you know, hopefully. I had doctors give me pain pills, but I've got such a high tolerance. I'd run right through. They used to give you 60. It wouldn't give you that much at one time now, or at least not me. But I'd run through 60 within a week or two, 10 days, easily. And you ain't supposed to refill that for a month. And, you know, they would tell me, I can't keep doing this. But they don't work otherwise. If I don't take 4 or 5 of the strong, whatever they give me, Percocets or Vicodin.
Yeah.
If I don't take 4 or 5 of them, I might as well not take any of them because it's not going to help. I've always had a high tolerance. I had a high pain threshold as far as, you know, in the ring. And then with the same thing with the pain medicine, it takes a lot. And, you know, it got to where the doctors were like, no, you know, you're getting dangerous. And I knew that. I knew it was getting dangerously high, you know, how much I was taking. Plus, yeah. You know, watching all the guys that were ODing on it, I didn't want to become one of those guys, you know. Especially it's my friends, so it really would hit me hard. You know, my friends are dying from what I'm having to do. And, you know, that was a big deal of, you know, I couldn't get the pain medicine, but I couldn't walk without it. It would feel like if you had a dagger or like ice picks lined up. And I just walked forward and step right on them because pain would shoot up from the foot up to midway up the leg, all through the ankle. I mean, I had to do something, you know, or lay in bed all day.
Yeah.
And, you know, so then when I couldn't get the pain medicine, I started drinking ridiculously because I got a high tolerance to that. And it like goes from 0 to 100 in no time. First 2 or 3 drinks, I'm all right. And then about the 4th, 5th. I gotta get stronger and stronger, and then next thing I know, I can't. But belligerent and can't. I don't even know what I'm doing.
Well, and the problem is, I mean, you know, most people have never been in the physical pain that you've been in with those ankles and the injuries. So, you know, it's easy for them to say, well, why would you do that? I mean, you're just trying to numb the pain because you're in some serious pain.
Sometimes when I used to get so tired of hearing people like, well, why don't you just deal with it? My job is pain. Professional wrestling, whether it be show or not, You're not going to get slammed around by 6'6", 300-pound muscle guys and thrown into turnbuckles and thrown into onto the floor and into the steel post on the outside. You're going to get hurt. And I'm doing that 300 days a year. And you know, I was trying to average it out one time. I was counting the bumps I was taking per match on and see what it averaged out to be. And my bumps are a little different than most people's. You know, I just say arm drags and hip tosses and slams. I'm coming off the top rope. And sometimes even if I'm coming out ahead on the guy, I'm still got to land. And a lot of times they catch me and power slam me off the top rope. And I'm taking ridiculous bumps, you know, suplexes off the top rope. But for it being, I was averaging almost 8 to 10 bumps a match. And I started figuring that out. Like, all right, so 300, if we wrestled 300 days, we did about 320 shows. We had double shots a lot on the weekend, especially towards the holidays, at the end of the year. So you figure 320 matches a year, we'll just make it easy with 10 bumps. Average of 10 bumps per thing. What's that, 3,200?
Yeah.
A year?
Yeah, and
20 years.
Yeah, you have some guys like Hogan may have not taken 10 bumps in a year. You know, yeah. Still wrestled the matches, but he wasn't getting thrown off the apron, thrown off the top. I mean, yeah, I never really thought about that, but you know, you really got your ass kicked.
Yeah, and Hogan was a smart one though. Jake Snake was like that. I love Jake to death. We were talking one time, and he, you know, this was a few years ago. I was living in Vegas. He was too. And we're sitting and talking, and he goes, "Marty, I could go in there today and do three moves and have the people on their feet." I mean, he did three moves for the whole match. And it's true.
Yeah.
That's why, you know, I take pride in teaching my kids. I mean, you know, Sean said something on the biography. Remember, he said, Marty brought this out of me. You know, because it was always there, but he just had to get him to understand. He was already good when he got to me, so I can't take credit. But the psychology, it was a little bit lacking on the psychology. And he picked it up quick, and then shit, he passed me on it.
Yeah, well, you don't have to say it. I'll say it for you. But there is no Shawn Michaels without Marty Jannetty. I mean, the stuff that he learned from you, there's just no question. I mean, you made him so much better from being around you so much. I want to ask you, what's your favorite moment of your career? Is there a match or a moment that you're most proud of?
There's one I'm most embarrassed about.
Oh, you can share that too.
But the most proud would probably be the Rocker reunion, because yeah. I had been gone for off national TV, or at least from WWE. At that point, right at 7 years. See, 98 was the last year, and that was with WCW, and that sucked. but so 2005, right? So 7 years I've not been on a national TV. I'm figuring people, you know, they ain't gonna know me. I remember Sean and I at the curtain getting ready to go out. We had a lot of resistance. Yeah. And I was listening to the crowd, you know, cheering for whatever matches were ahead of us or whatever. And, you know, Sean is the big deal, and he's been there. He ain't been gone. So I know they're going to cheer like hell for him. But I'm thinking they might not remember me. And I was telling Sean, and Sean comes in, and he goes, "What's the matter? You look nervous." "So are you nervous?" I said, I don't know. I said, "What if they don't remember me?" And he said, "Because the worst thing you want to do is come out to a symphony of silence." You know? And Sean's like, "Are you kidding me? We're the Rockers. They're not going to forget you." And I'm like, "Well, I mean, I know they're not going to forget you." So the music plays, and there was a pretty good pop. So I thought, well, how did they remember that Rocker music? But then as we stepped out the curtain, oh, man, they just went crazy. And, I got so excited about it that I was just sitting there taking it in, because I ain't been on the stage that big in, you know, 7 years.
Yeah.
I'm just sitting there looking at them like, wow, this is what I was doing every night. This is so great. Sean comes over and goes, "Come on, man, we got to go to the ring." I forgot, we still got to go to the ring. But he said it to me. He goes, And see, he was all worried they was going to forget you. But the match, Sean and I had not even barely spoke to each other over that 7 years. Since we had not necessarily a fallout, but I just got a little disappointed with him once. I think around the year 2000, he had a school over in San Antonio, and I was running a school in Houston. And he was wanting me to, well, I forgot who it was, called me from his school. He was wanting me to come over there and run his school. But I was happy where I was at. Probably should have went now in hindsight, but I was happy with my own school. I didn't want to go have to work under him. And I think he might have took offense to it or something. I don't know. But I don't know that I took offense to it, but he recruited some of my best guys that I'd built up, you know, and as soon as I got them built up, you know, that kind of crap. That happens even in the independent level. And so we really didn't speak for a little bit. I don't know how much animosity was actually there. But from not talking for quite a while, you know, for about 4 or 5 years, we didn't speak at all. And then meeting up and having a Rocket reunion match, man, we did everything in sync like we had not even stopped all those years. Because the last time we wrestled as a team together would have been 91, the end of 91, beginning of 92. So what, 13 years later, you're wrestling the same as you did. I just thought that was great.
The only thing I wish that you would have done that night is had Sean in some matching ring gear.
Well, and I was lucky enough just to get something that looked rockerish. Yeah, but you know, I don't know if that would have been cool. I mean, I thought the same thing, but then again, after Julie, and I didn't mean to say her name. In fact, I didn't say her name, and I won't say Julie again. I wasn't going to take no chance and ask her to see if Sean would wear some rocker stuff. And then certainly I wasn't going to go say, Sean, I'm going to wear some HBK stuff.
Should the Rockers be in the Hall of Fame?
There will be one day. There's a reason that I don't want to get into, but there's a reason right now.
Good. So that's what I want to see. I want to see the two of you get in the Hall of Fame together. I want you to be up on stage. I want you to be healthy and happy and looking like $1 million in a suit.
Well, I appreciate that. And that will happen.
Okay. I'm taking your word for it, and I will be there cheering you guys on, and you'll be busy that weekend, but at a different WrestleMania, we're going to have some Jack and Cokes together.
Oh, I'll just have the Jack. You have the Coke.
All right.
But listen, I'm telling your fans and my fans over on Facebook. Like I said, I want to put this up on Facebook.
Yeah, tell everyone where they can find you, how they can get a hold of you, where they can buy your stuff, anything. Just make sure people know.
The best place is Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. I'm on LinkedIn. There's something else. But the only one I really do much with is Facebook. If you go there, it's under my name, and it's the one. There's a few fake ones, and then I got a fan site. But the one that you want to go to, it's a picture of me right in front of the barbershop window. Not the same barbershop, but the barbershop window. That's how you'll know that's mine. And if you can't get if you follow at least, because they've limited me to 5,000, but I can have as many followers as once. And we still communicate with the messaging, and I'll get you in as soon as I can. I'm trying to get Facebook to let me get that little blue dot thing that's certified, and they let you have as many friends as you want. But right now they're not doing that.
And then you're on Cameo as well, right? People can get a video from you.
Yes, on Cameo. And again, it's under my name, Marty Jannetty, or One Marty Jannetty. I think Twitter's at One Marty Jannetty. And
I so appreciate you being here. I'm glad to hear that you're feeling great and you're healthy, and we haven't seen the last of you on the big stage. So
that's what I did want to finish telling your fans, please. My fans, and anybody else out there that hears that. I'm going to have two healthy, good ankles to train again on within probably in the six weeks to 2 months. And so give me 90 days after that, and you're going to see the transformation. You're not going to believe that a human could do. And that's a promise.
I love it. I love it. Hey, Marty, thank you so much for joining us. Everyone's going to love hearing from you and hearing this interview. And we know that we haven't seen the last of you, and we can't wait to see you again soon. Thank you so much. And we look forward to seeing you at fan fests and cameos and everywhere that you're going to be.
Well, I appreciate it, my brother. You stay in touch. You got my number. We'll talk every so often. And for everybody out there, man, y'all keep on rocking.
Ho! It's time for the aftermath.
All right. So because of some scheduling issues, I did the interview with Marty. You were on vacation or out of town or doing God knows what.
Yep.
Okay. So
like to party. Yep.
So here's the deal. You listened to it. What did you think? Because you said you were driving back home. You were on a little yes. road trip. And so you took the time to listen to the interviews you were driving when I sent it to you. What did you think? What were your impressions of Marty and what we talked about? What yep. was noteworthy from our discussion that you thought?
I was driving back from visiting my parents and things like that after finally the pandemic madness. But I think that it was one the biggest things was I felt like he has been in the news for some crazy things lately. Last 12 months, whatever it might be. He was like extremely upbeat. I feel like yeah. he was very excited about where he's at. I think I texted you like, you know, the guy and like a lot of these people, like they're just, you know, like he said, like, you know, 6-7 painkillers a day, because that's what it took. And so I can't imagine. And so,
imagine, but also could never, I mean, you're an asshole if you judge anyone that does that. I mean, these people are right. in pain.
And so I'm not passing judgment on what he said in the past or anything like that. But I think that's one of those, like, you know, who knows, you know, kind of what he was dealing with and going through when some of those things were said, and who knows the true story there. But, you know, I feel like he is, you know, he acknowledges that fact too. So I can't ever fault that, you know, he knows the situation he's in. And he acknowledged too, like there, he has felt like crap before this, and he wasn't even sure about doing the A&E kind of show, but you know, it just, you know, he kind of pushed himself to do it. And it's great to hear that he's still got a, I had no clue he had still had a wrestling school. And so like for him though, he wants to get back out there. I feel like the guy, like it's almost like, you know, resurrection of Jake Snake type stuff of like, I really got the vibe where it's like, if he got the call and he was healthy, like dude would be diving around out there. Like, and so I my overall take from it, and I, you know, I love the stories and all this different stuff that he talked about, and, you know, the different glass panes and their outfits and being on the road. And I'm sure he has incredible memories of Sean from some of that stuff. And he spoke extremely highly of Sean, which, you know, that doesn't always get out there. And so I'm sure they had their differences, just like you and I have professional differences. Like, you know, that's just part of it. But for me, like I was most like kind of happy to see that he's happy.
I completely agree with you. And I think he would be a tremendous asset at the Performance Center.
Yeah. And not even at the, yeah, that would be great. I think, like, you know, having him, you know, AEW bringing some of these people in, but it doesn't have to be the big shows either. Like you put him, like, let him go train and work with some of the guys and, or, you know, the men and women at TNA. Like, you know, he set the standard for a lot of this high flying stuff. Just like say some of these, like Brian Pillman and, you know, some of these other people did, like they were doing things that were crazy, and especially like tag team wrestling, and everybody wants to focus on tag team wrestling. Like, you know, yeah, I'm sure, you know, you might say, oh, there's people, you know, you can find people that, you know, been around longer or something like that. But for what they were doing at the time they were doing it, like it was unmatched.
I, Yeah, that's what you have to look at things in context of when they took place.
Right.
And those Rockers matches, and you and I need to go back and watch one. There's a couple of them.
Got them on our lists.
Yep. Yeah, there was a Brainbusters one that's supposed to be fantastic. I think it was at MSG. There's a couple that took place at WrestleMania. I believe there was one at Royal Rumble. I really want to find one and watch it. Nobody was doing that stuff. And I'm not saying anywhere in the world, but certainly in the United States on a big stage, no one was doing anything like that. It was just absolutely incredible. And the barbershop, those types of angles didn't take place. Like that was, again, you watch it now and you're just, and again, it's awesome now, but it's like, oh, well, you know, throwing someone through the glass and cutting a mean promo and a heel turn. Dude, that shit didn't happen back then. Like it was cartoon, goofy stuff, you know, action figures. I mean, it wasn't like that. And then the Sean Marty matches, like the one we watched, and just their stuff in general. You know, you could put that match on AEW this week and you'd go, wow, that was a really fucking good match.
Mm-hmm.
And for that to have happened, you know, 28 years ago, that's really impressive, because 99.9% of the wrestling that occurred in that era, you watch it now and you're like, this is awful. And you watch that match and it's like, I could have watched this on Tuesday and said it was the best match that I've, you know, seen all year.
Yeah.
So, and one other thing and again, as I, you know, interviewed Marty and as we talked through his career and we looked at stuff, and I know you're going to talk about some of this, but the guy comes out of nowhere and he has a classic match with Kurt Angle. Go back and watch that one. I mean, this guy is just a all-time great in-ring worker. And, you know, he may not get the notoriety of some other people. I really wish, you know, one of the things I wish is, you know, Sean got the heartbreak kid gimmick. I wish Marty could have gotten another singles gimmick that was like that, because the guy could work. Okay, there was never any doubt about that. So he could have had a great Intercontinental title reign as well, and who knows what could have happened. But a lot of fun, a lot of great stuff. But we've got some more business here. We got to talk payoff scores. We got to talk aftermath. We got to talk, because we're on the 100th episode of The Payoff, we got to talk about our favorite episodes from The Payoff. So let's get into it.
Yeah, so I'll start, and like I said, we're just doing a little different here, but I'll start actually with the reviews of the match that we kind of brought up with him, kind of talked through and things like that, because he was telling stories. And so, and this was, like Tom said, that card that we gave, the July 19th, 1993 edition of Raw at the Manhattan Center. Here was the write-up for this match, actually. Well, I'll start with the PWI that year. Marty was 13, Sean was 3. And so people wouldn't, you know, like Marty was 13. Like that's pretty impressive. Like, and so, but the review on this one, this is of course Dave Meltzer on this one. The 7/19 Monday Night Raw show featured the best match of WWF television, perhaps ever, with Shawn Michaels versus Marty Jannetty in the 4¾ stars range. Jannetty scored a pin early, but Michaels had his feet on the rope, so they restarted. Finish saw Jannetty miss a crossbody and take a bump over the top rope to the floor. Diesel threw him back in the ring where he was pinned. These two worked almost a state-of-the-art style match, combining lucha moves and choreographed spots, Japanese pacing, and a little American psychology. And so I have watched it. I'm assuming, Tom, you have as well, too. Not just with him, but just kind of, you know, so 4¾ stars on this one, like crazy. So we're going to give a score in a second here for just kind of this whole arc and things like that for him. And so, but some of the highlights for just kind of what he did and kind of what's, you know, what's going on. And so don't forget, like he actually tagged with the 1-2-3 Kid for a little while. He did a short stint in actually ECW in 1995. One that, you know, it gets lost to the kind of history and, you know, time and things like that. But you had the New Rockers. It was him. It was February 1996. It was him and Leaf Cassidy. And of course, Leaf Cassidy known by, or more known by his more common name of Al Snow, quite the tag team, never won the tag team championships. You know, these guys, there was actually a few matches between them eventually as well too. you know, the reports, you know, Marty just wasn't happy with how this was kind of playing out, which I get it. And so just kind of half, but his last match was actually December 16th, 1996 with the New Rockers and kind of doing that. He's done a lot of time on the independent circuit as well too. You know, different house shows, you know, UCW in 1997, along with some other people. He was in Jimmy Hart's XWF promotion as well too, for a couple of years in the early 2000s. He actually more recently, one of his more recent matches, I say in a name that we all know, but Joey Janela actually had a match with him for AIW wrestling. And so he actually lost to Joey, but had that match. And so, you know, just interesting kind of, you know, how that plays out and kind of, you know, dealing with that. And he's still wrestling. I say still wrestling current guys. He has his wrestling school as well too. And so, you know, doing that now, he did spend some time actually, I kind of jumped 2000 there, but you know, he was in WCW. He was injured actually like 98, 99, kind of, you know, doing that as well too. But, the biggest thing that he talked about a lot, and it's one you and I haven't even brought up yet, was the reunion. And so in 2005, which just the one time only build again, you know, the Rockers, you know, their original music, the clip itself is one they were taking on La Resistance. Like, this is another one too, where after I watched the interview, I got home, I kind of unpacked. And then that evening I actually, you know, I watched that match and kind of just them. And it's great to watch that whole entrance of just how like excited they were, like, you know, them kind of having the match, doing the Rocker Dropper, like, you know, their move. And like, it was really cool to see that, especially in like 2005 and kind of doing that. But not only that, but this run in 2005, as Tom said, it's a match on our list that we will cover one day, was just his absolute, another just barn burner, incredible match with Kurt Angle, which you wouldn't have thought, like, you know, this random match in 2005 where he's just booked against Kurt Angle. He said, you know, he loved working with Kurt as well too. But these guys went out and just did a huge match, like a 20-minute match, even nowadays we don't get 20-minute matches on, you know, the weekly shows. And so to have that though, it's one that, you know, Tom and I want to talk about that one. I'm sure if we could, you know, talk with him again, that's the one match we'd want to sit and watch with him as well too, because it was just absolutely, it was a great, like, shockingly good. And so it's one that we will definitely go back to and revisit on a later show. But so all this, you know, you take all this and his career into account. So we're actually going to score not just this match, but just kind of really like the Rocker's career, if you will, with Marty Jannetty. So Tom, like, kind of where are you ranking it? Kind of what's your score, you know, unofficial, official for all of this?
So in totality, we're talking Rockers, we're talking breakup, we're talking their singles matches. I'm going to give, on a scale 1 to 10, this is how we do it at the Payoff, I'm going to give it an 8. Okay. You know what I love. I've said it enough times. We're just missing the end, right? Yeah. We're just missing that one-on-one WrestleMania at 8 match. Big ass crowd and them tearing down the house, because they absolutely would have. And that's really all we're missing, is some major blow off to the feud. Let me fantasy book for a second. I know we were a few years early on this, but can you imagine the two of these guys in their final blow off match for the Intercontinental Champion being in a ladder match?
Yeah.
Come on. Right. So yeah, we're just missing that one thing. But otherwise, just great. I mean, all great stuff around. What about you?
I'm a 7.5. And so I'm not surprised you're a little higher than me. I'm with you though. I would love to, we haven't gotten the full, not say we haven't gotten it, but I hope that we get a bigger payoff. Like, maybe gets that one final match, you know, the kind of return. I think that he is dead on. I actually appreciated you asking him the final question of, will the Rockers be in the Hall of Fame? And I think that, yeah.
I think we may have made some news with this interview.
Hopefully. Yeah. And so he thinks it. I think that there are a lot of people out there that, you know, may disagree because of some of the stuff he said, but you know, especially with Dark Side of the Ring, you know, you and I've talked about it a lot. You some people can separate the character from the man. Other people can't, you know, it's just, that's wrestling. It's one of the few things that that's where it's at. And so I would hope though, you know, you can to realize like based on their quality of work, I like you kind of, you can't say that they aren't at that caliber. And yes, it's Vince's Hall of Fame. There might be bad blood there. Who knows? But like, for me, like, yeah, in regards to just the stamp that they left on wrestling, I don't think, you know, like, you can't not put them in there. It just can't be a thing. And so who knows? Like, we could be wrong too. But like I said, I'm glad you asked him that. So you got an 8. I got a 7.5. I think that's where we'll keep it. And that's good stuff. So, okay. So we did our payoff scores, of course, you know, doing this a little bit differently. We wanted to kind of take a few minutes here to discuss, like, we've done 100 episodes, which is just crazy. We're super,
you're saying excited. This, like, it's so serious.
It is though. Like, you know, we've done this. It's exciting.
It's real to me. Damn. It's still real to me. Damn.
It is real to me. And so, but you and I wanted to go back. We wanted to take a little bit of time and kind of, you know, we always say about go back in the archives. We got all kinds of good stuff, but like, you know, we've got 2 years of archives at this point. And so we wanted to kind of count down our top three of what we've covered and what we've talked about. We're not going to rank or score them, but I had said, let's kind of, you know, look at where we rank everything and go from there. So, and then I've got a kind of fun follow-up question for you as well too, Tom. And so you want to start, I will start with my number three. And then if you want to give your,
all right, so we're going to do our number three, and this is favorite episode. This isn't favorite match. This is just our favorite episode to do. These are great ones to go back in the archive and watch the matches. So our favorite episodes. So we're going to, you'll do your third. I'll do my third, second.
And we'll go back and forth. First. Yeah. And okay. Let us know, we'll put it out on social media. Let us know what your favorite episode
and then,
is too.
And then so, after yeah. that, I've got two honorable mentions. Okay.
That's right.
And then
right.
I'm going to tell you, and you may want to do the same. I'm going to tell you the one that surprised me, or I'm sorry, the one that exceeded my expectations the most match
okay.
and the one that sucked way worse than I could have ever imagined.
Okay. I'll have to think about it, but here
okay,
we go.
So, okay. One that exceeded and one that underwhelmed you. All right. So okay. Your third favorite episode of all time is,
I'm going to guess that this one is on your list, and Tom and I have not seen each other's list. We're keeping them secret. I'm going back to WrestleMania 13, Bret and Steve Austin at the submission match. That was one I had not fully engrossed myself in that one. And that was one that I have to, like, after going back and watching it, just incredible match, plain and simple. Like, if that's my number three, I can't wait for my 2 and 1, but WrestleMania 13, Bret and Austin is my number three, my third favorite payoff episode that we've ever done.
My third favorite payoff episode we've ever done. Macho Man and Shawn Michaels at WWF UK Rampage UK. 92. Yep. Jeff, you and I were just shooting the shit one day. All right. Maybe I text you. I didn't know this match existed. And I'm like, holy shit, they actually wrestled. It was like a 15-minute match and Savage was champion. I don't know if Shawn was IC champion. But anyways, I was like, I can't believe this. And we watched the match and it was awesome. And the action was great. And I was just so happy to see it. So this was one of my favorite episodes because not because it was the best match of all time or the best build of all time, but because I just love talking about it. Number okay. two for you.
Number two for me, I'm switching promotions here. I am going to, not necessarily the match itself of Too Cold Scorpio versus Shane Douglas, but what happened after in the NWA World Title Tournament and the formation of ECW. That one, you are the ECW mark out of the two of us, but, you know, and I had always, again, heard the stories of that. I kind of knew kind of what happened, but going back, watching it, knowing what ECW has since turned into, that one, I again, like TNA, I want to cover more ECW. Yep. Because there's some good stuff in there. We have ECW, more ECW on the list, so don't worry about that, fans at home. But that will be my number two, is both not the match, but the speech after from Shane Douglas throwing down the belt and what that meant for the wrestling industry. And that was fun for me to learn about that one. So
we've done 100 episodes, and that's your second favorite ever. And it's my second favorite ever, too.
Hey, all right. Hey, exciting. All
right. It was awesome. I mean, that's a really fun one to talk about because there was a lot of shit happening. Yeah, that was great. Nothing to add to that. But yeah, that's also my second favorite episode ever. And I think our favorite episode is going to be the same, but let's find out.
I got a feeling here too. This is weird. If we're synced up this much, this is scary. We may have to talk for a week or two, but, I'll just say this. Is it in 2004?
It sure is.
It's mine's in 2004 too. So of course it looks like Tom and I both going with episode payoff, as I have it labeled in the files, episode 001. This would be Eddie and Brock for the WWE Championship, No Way Out 2004 with, and credit, Shane was on that episode number two, but Vicky was on this episode number one and put us on the map. So that is what it has to be at the top for me. It just has to. And sidebar story, I'm sure you remember this too. And this was credit to my brother, actually, because you and I, we got yelled at by Reddit because we posted about that we were coming out with this show and I had been watching Reddit. And then they said, oh, you can't promote, you know, and things like that. But we did it anyways. And then we tested posting the episode. And we missed one of the, like, because everyone knows we're on multiple platforms. You can find us all over the place. And someone found the episode and it had been shared without you and I knowing, but it was there, shared on Reddit. And there was a huge thread on the show and kind of what was happening and all this other stuff. And it was credit to my brother. Cause my brother said, he's like, you need to check out Reddit. You got like 100 comments on your episode. And we were like, we're not even live. And we ended up dropping the episode all of a sudden because we're like, holy shit, like what is happening? And so credit to Vicky Guerrero, credit to, just the word of mouth on that one. That was a match everybody wanted to hear about. It was one you and I were excited to talk about. We had no idea what we were doing that week, but we made it work. We had Vicky. And, you know, just great stuff. They just all around that set the standard for us.
Love it. Love it. Love it. So our top two are the same and just great. Go back and listen. They're both great episodes. All right. So I had two more and I'll go first. If you need to think about these for a minute,
go ahead.
That's the fine. Match that was way better than you would have expected. And then the match that sucked way worse than you would have ever expected.
I've got that one. I didn't even need to look that one up, but go ahead.
God, we might have the same two on these as well. So match that blew my mind and was way better than I thought. The TNA King of the Mountain Slammiversary 2007.
Yeah,
Styles, Angle, one, Joe, yep. Cage, Chris Harris. That, yep. That was just awesome. Out of this world. What was your most...
Yep. And for me, kind of going back and looking at it and kind of what was out there, and you at a more recent episode, I'm actually going to go an older episode. And especially because, you know, we had the Dark Side of the Ring about him recently, but the Brian Pillman versus Jushin Liger match would have exceeded what, you know, just what they were doing and kind of the craziness with that one. Like that one exceeded. I'm glad we had that one as one of our first episodes because. Yeah, we almost needed it to set the, you know, to see that and know like where so much of the wrestling that came after it came from.
Yep.
And so that one absolutely exceeded my expectations.
Okay. And then the match, it sucked way worse than I could have ever imagined. Kevin Nash, Goldberg, Starrcade 98. That was one of the worst wrestling matches I've ever watched in my life. I can't believe people didn't bash on that match more than they did. It was horrible. What about you?
Me, I'm going early as well too on this one. And one that I know I was worried of what would happen. I think the match itself, we were hoping for good publicity from this one. But the match itself and our guest that day, I'm going to go with Buff Bagwell versus Canyon on this one and the Judy Bagwell on a pole. That was not good wrestling. That was not good anything. And so, I was worried after that one because we caught a lot of hell of like totally out of our control, like, you know, how it sounded and things like that. It was our infancy, but that match was not good.
fair. It's fair.
Okay. You got any I have a kind of a follow-up question as well for you, just kind of personal memories for you and I. We've been doing this for 2 years. What has been your kind of favorite moment though of us doing this and kind of getting to hang out and, you know, talk about wrestling and just the whole experience? What has been something that you have gotten out of it that you have enjoyed?
So I'm going to give you two answers. I'm going to tell you the thing that's been the most enjoyable, and there's been a lot of them, but I'll tell you what's been the most enjoyable. Number one. Number two is I'm going to tell you what I wish would have happened, but will at some point. So the thing that's been the best is us getting the StarCast and yes. ending up doing a stage show. We had Francine. What a blast that was. That was awesome and unexpected and great and loved it. So that was a really, really cool thing. We appreciate the StarCast team asking us to do that. And we think we delivered a really good conversation with Francine. I know she enjoyed it and appreciated it. The crowd really liked it. Yeah. And the crowd really liked it as well. So that's my favorite. The one thing that I wish would have happened is we were supposed to go to WrestleMania together, and you and I have not attended a WrestleMania together, but we will at some point soon. So I look forward to that. What about you?
I'm with you as well too. And that was what I was getting at too, was just the whole event and kind of going there and being able to hang out and just, you know, rub shoulders with some people. And we met a lot of good people. And I still to this day remember, you know, I just kind of funny. And for people that were there and got to interact, and you and I, it was the CM Punk show and the line was wrapped down the hallway and, you know, like six people deep. And you and I just walked up there with our box of koozies and just started handing them to everybody in the line. And I remember, I don't even know, like, you heard her, but like one of like the volunteers that was working the show was like, that's a really good idea. Like, and so, and you and I were just handing koozies out to everybody, whether they had them already or not. And so, you know, that, like, you know, those type of memories, that's the good stuff, you know, wrestling, bringing us together and stuff like that. You know, I know they're not doing that again this year, unfortunately, with All Out or All In.
And my honorable mention is, you know, you and I have some mutual friends and people that know both of us, and to see people, the look on their face when they find out that you and I have a professional wrestling podcast together.
Yep. Weekly.
Wait,
yep.
Huh? What do you mean? Yeah. I'm like, 100 episodes, couple hundred thousand downloads. What? Huh?
Yep.
What do you mean? Like pro wrestling?
In our shoot jobs, like, we have a mutual friend as well too, who I know he has a podcast as well too, and maybe does an episode once a month, if that. And so, and you know, I was kind of scrolling through all the episodes we have, and at the time we probably had 70 or 80 episodes, and he was like, "This is like a real thing for you guys." I was like, "Yeah, like, you know, why wouldn't it be? Like, we take it serious. We do this. We have a lot of fun doing it too, because we talk about wrestling. So why wouldn't we?" And so, just overall really fun stuff, really good stuff. So,
I'll close by just saying thank you to everyone for listening, for spreading the word. We really appreciate it. You know, it's been a wild ride, and we're going to keep doing it. We've got a ton of matches to cover. We got so many more just classic WWF, WCW, but then we've got some of these great TNA matches that we barely scratched the surface on. We've got ECW matches. We've got that FMW, Vice documentary coming. So maybe we'll try to grab a match or two from them. I mean, who knows what is out there. I was even thinking, we tried to do like Tiger Mask and Dynamite Kid. You know, they were talking about that on the documentary, and I know those matches are supposed to be classic. So we're going to find all kinds of stuff and keep doing this. We enjoy doing it. We appreciate the support. Jeff, anything else to add?
Yeah, the one thing we haven't done in a while is just his social media. I know Marty said it, but I wanted to put it out there too, like kind of dropping him a line, kind of checking in him and stuff like that. So on Twitter, so it's kind of flipped. On Twitter, he's at one. That's the number one, Marty Jannetty. It's two N's and two T's in his last name. But then on Instagram, it's flipped, and he's just at Marty Jannetty one. And so Twitter, one Marty Jannetty, Instagram, Marty Jannetty one. Drop him a line. He is active on all that stuff. You know, it definitely sounds like from when we were talking to him, like he would love to interact with more of the fans and things like that. And so let him know how you feel about him. Let him know how you feel about this episode. Like Tom and I, you know, we thoroughly enjoyed that you got to talk to him, but I've thoroughly enjoyed the fact that we got him. And so I have to ask Tom before we send it home, like you got Marty. And so who's next on the list? Like, you know, who is now the one that we need to get?
It's all downhill from here.
Right. Yeah.
Honestly, it is.
Yep.
I have no one. I will come up with somebody else that I want on our show, and I will hunt them down and we'll get them on the show.
We'll make it happen. Absolutely.
Actually, so. You ready? You ready for it? I have spoken to him and we've discussed doing it. He said he'd be interested in doing it. I want to have Lanny Poffo on to talk some Macho Man matches.
Yep. That doesn't surprise me. Yeah.
So we're going to get him on. I've met him in person. Super nice guy. I was walking at WrestleCon or something a couple years ago and I hear, hey, hey, hey. And it like, I turn around and it's him. And I'm like, and he's like, that's incredible. And I'm like, what the hell is he talking about? And then I looked down, I'm like, oh, I had a Macho Man shirt on. It wasn't like the standard one everyone has. It was a little bit different. He's like, where'd you get that? And you know, wherever it was, but it was kind of a unique match. He's like, I love it. And so super nice guy. I'd love to have him on, break down some Macho Man matches. So that's my next goal. We'll get him on for sure. But yeah, we're going to keep doing this. We got so much to cover. Jeff, episode 100. Why don't you close us out?
Oh my gosh. What an honor.
Jeff just fell out of his chair.
Yes, I did. I thought I was going to break it. And so thank you again to our fans. We couldn't do this without you. So no matter where you are in the world, listening, all that good stuff, we always appreciate you guys kind of tuning in. Like Tom said, at Payoff Pod, we're on all that social media. We're going to keep bringing you all the reminders, all the archives, all the good stuff that we've got. And we've got episodes lined up. It's SummerSlam season. We haven't even talked about it in a couple of weeks, but we're in SummerSlam season. We're getting into it. We got a lot of good stuff. And so as always, as Tom says, thank you for joining us on The Payoff.